We're talking with Christopher White about other worlds, spirituality, and the search for invisible dimensions. You know, humans have been trying to reach alternate realities, other worlds, basically forever. I mean, either through prayer or plants or chemicals or by projecting their consciousness. It's nothing new. The question is, can we get there? And if we get there, is someone else there? And is that someone else us? We're going to get into that, then open up the phone lines with your calls and questions and comments in this hour of Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. Chris White, so tell me this. In the example of Flatland, where this some higher dimension being reaches down and grabs somebody from 2D world and pulls them up, could someone from 6D or 7D or 11D reach down and grab us and pull us up so we can understand the true nature of reality? What do you think?
Sure. I mean, I think that, you know, it depends on how you think about those dimensions and what's in them. But, I mean, you certainly have had, you know, religious and spiritual people over the last 100 years say things just like that, right? I mean, in fact, you've had people, even C.S. Lewis, talk about, you know, God and Christ as higher dimensional and as beings that come down and insert themselves into our lower dimensional world, just like the sphere did that in Abbott's book of Flatland. So, yes, people have definitely thought about, thought about visitors from higher realms or spiritual beings or angels or whatever as higher dimensional and as kind of these higher dimensional objects that insert themselves into our world.
That sounds perilously close to saying that science and religion could coexist, that, you know, that paranormal beliefs could coexist with a scientifically acceptable version of reality.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, in my book, I try to put, you know, a number of different people in the story. So I have, you know, people who have, let's say, these kinds of moments of inspiration or who experience like a near-death experience. And then I have them talking about their experience. And then I also have scientists in the book as well and some skeptics. So I have different voices in the book, you know, talking about what the meaning of these events are. And, you know, there's not just one story in the book. There's a lot of different voices there trying to interpret what's happening. But you definitely have, you know, the through line in the book is are these people who have these kinds of uncanny experiences or remarkable experiences, moments of insight or intuition or near-death experiences or out-of-body experiences and so on, and that they are then using scientific concepts to understand what could be happening. And I think that, you know, figures in my book, all of us today, I mean, I think that we all want to use science. You know, I think science is sort of the authoritative set of discourses that we use to talk about reality. So I think that's what they're doing. I think, you know, just like J.W. Dunn, right, who had these dreams that seemed to predict the future, where did he go? You know, he didn't actually go to the Bible at that point to figure it out. He went to Einstein. You know, he went to sort of like popular science books. And I think that, you know, that's one point I try to make in the book, is I think a lot of us are sort of inspired by and interested in fantastic scientific concepts.
Humans have been trying to reach other higher dimensions or other realities for a long time. Prayer would be an example of reaching out to some invisible world there. Remote viewing.
Yeah. There's all kinds of things that would fit into that. You're right. And people have been trying to reach the transcendent ever since there have been humans on Earth, right? Reaching for something else, reaching beyond our own subjectivity. And we talked about dreams earlier, I think, through dreams. And, you know, in the 60s and at other times, you know, Americans used psychedelic drugs to open up what they believed was like a doorway of consciousness into another realm. And in other cultures, you might use other plants or substances or hallucinogens to reach transcendent. But prayer, meditation, absolutely. They're all different methods.
So I'm wondering if the example of remote viewing, where people project their consciousness over space and time, seemingly independent of space and time, to access information that they shouldn't be able to get. Does that make sense because of the idea of other worlds, higher dimensions?
Well, let's see. I think people have certainly talked about remote viewing and other parapsychological phenomena as higher dimensional, because, you know, maybe we can go back to Abbott's book, Flatland, for a minute, because, you know, in Flatland, what happens is, you know, you can imagine a two-dimensional world of characters, very flat, right, sliding around the surface of your desk. They know a length and width, but they don't know that third direction or dimension, which is up or down. So if you're a figure in Flatland, let's say you're just a flat square and you're sliding around on the surface of your flat world, and let's say you look out, you know, you look around and what do you see? Well, if you're a flat square sliding around on a flat world, you actually don't see your whole world. You just see a line, right? Let's say a friend comes towards you and he's a triangle, and he's sliding towards you. What do you see? Well, you just see a line. Everyone in Flatland can just see a one-dimensional line. But what happens when the flat square gets pulled off of his two-dimensional world up into a higher space, a three-dimensional space, in the story is suddenly he can see the full dimensionality of his flat world. So he looks and he sees Flatland before him all laid out, and he suddenly has powers of vision that he never had, right? He can look down at Flatland. He can see for the first time not just lines, but he can see people's homes. He can see into their homes, right? Because he's looking down on the whole flat world. So he can see all of his friends, whether they're triangles or squares or lines. He can see all of their dimensions. He can see even inside, right? Let's say he has a friend who's a triangle. All he saw before was their line coming towards him, but now he can see the whole triangle. He can even see inside the triangle. He can see inside homes. So I raise this as an example because some people have used this to say, aha, you know, well, if we were raised somehow in consciousness up into a higher spatial dimension, maybe we could look back on our three-dimensional world and have amazing powers of vision. So, you know, maybe we, just like the square, right, when raised to a higher dimension, we would look back on our world and what would we see? We would see all sides of everything at once. You could look down on your home, for instance, and see all the rooms laid out. You know, you could see the insides of everyone's bodies. You could see the outsides of everyone's bodies. You could see the top of the house and the bottom of the house. So you would have a kind of a higher dimensional vision. And so people do indeed use these ideas to talk about things like remote viewing, right? Or they use these ideas actually to talk about near-death experiences, because sometimes people have near-death experiences. They talk about having this kind of special vision, right, where they can see things they never saw before. So maybe remote viewing is a higher dimensional phenomena. I don't know. You know, certainly people have talked about it that way. And I, in my book, and especially in the later chapters and in the epilogue, is where I talk about sort of near-death experiences and some parapsychological phenomena like remote viewing.
Yeah, Raymond Moody is somebody I've met and person and interviewed. It's just, you know, he's a trailblazer in discussing that those experiences that so many people have had and trying to put it in context. This kind of idea makes it easier to understand those experiences.
I looked at his books too. He's really interesting. I love the books. I looked at his books too because I was studying near-death experiences for like the epilogue of the book and the last couple chapters of the book. And, you know, what you do find, or what I found, is that people do use this kind of language. You know, it's almost like they talk like the square in Flatland as a character, you know, as a character who's suddenly lifted off of, you know, their limited world, their lower dimensional world, into some sort of higher dimensional space. And many of them use language like, you know, suddenly there I saw an altered geometry before me, and the dimensions of the room changed and shifted. And others talk about being able to see, like in a hospital setting, right? If someone had a near-death experience in a hospital setting, others talk about rising up above the hospital setting and being able to see into different rooms in the hospital. So, once again, another case in which, you know, you're raised into a higher spatial dimension, and then you can suddenly have these incredible powers of vision that you didn't have before, right? You can see through walls, right? You can see in places that you're not. People in Moody's book and many others, you know, there's a lot of literature now about near-death experiences. People do sometimes use this language of higher dimensions to talk about what they experienced.
Not to put seances in the same category, but you do address seances and people's attempts to reach a higher power or another world. What's going on with those folks? Are they? Is there any legitimacy to that, or do you not want to pass judgment on it?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's funny. It's funny writing a book like this because, you know, I've never had any of these experiences. So, you know, I've never had a dream that seemed to predict the future. You know, I've never had an out-of-body experience, right? Or some of the experiences I've talked about. So, you know,
no deja vu?
I have had deja vu for sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in the book, I talk about a lot of experiences that other people are having. You know, and I try to put in play their voices and how they understand what's happening. But I don't know about seances. You know, I wouldn't rule it out as being possible. You know, I mean, I think that, I mean, if this book taught me one thing, it would be that I think that the world is much more complex and amazing, really, than we know. You know, I think there's much more to the universe than meets the eye. You know, I do believe that, and I think we know that from science. I mean, when you look at these physicists and cosmologists and read their narratives about the universe, read their popular science publications. I mean, there's more to the universe than meets the eye, and so I really wouldn't rule out spirits or ghosts or all those kinds of things. You know, I wouldn't be so arrogant as to you know, sit here and say, oh, you know, you definitely, there's no way that anyone could have an experience like that. So I guess I would just remain, you know, open to those possibilities.
You know, I think what people would want to know is there a higher dimension that's heaven, that would count as heaven? And if so, do we go there, and do we live on beyond this?
Yeah, right. That's another, you know, big question that I try to raise in the book. You know, the book has all of these big questions. You know, and I don't answer that question in the book. I think that's another question, like your question about spirits and ghosts and seances. I'm certainly open to the possibility there. And personally, I do believe that there is another world that we go to after this world. I mean, personally, I am a believer. You know, I do believe in God and I do believe in spirit. So I think I line up more on that side of things with a kind of an openness to these different possibilities. Like I say in the book, I try to put different voices in there who have different opinions and
right.
let the reader kind of decide what they think, you know.
Well, we'll try to take a couple of calls. There's a bunch of folks on the phone want to talk to you.
Sure.
We'll go east of the Rockies. Moses in Tallahassee, you're on with Christopher White.
Yes, good morning, George Knapp and Christopher White. How are you guys doing?
Good morning. Thanks for calling.
What's on your mind?
I have some questions. Are you familiar with this person that's in the Bible called Melchizedek, King of Salem? Jesus was made a high priest after this order.
I'm not real familiar there, but maybe you can tell me a little bit about him.
Okay, Melchizedek, once you break down the word Melchi, it's Mel itself of melanin, which means black or very dark. And we most people know chi means energy. So Zedek means priest, instructor, or teacher. They said that this Melchizedek character had no mother, no father, no beginning, no ending. Zedek, the priest, was teaching the science of energy. Energy cannot be created nor destroyed. It only changes form. So Jesus was the last one to be made a high priest after that order. It's two psalms that really speaks about what you're talking about, metaphysics. It's 48 and 78. I will open my dark sayings upon the harp, and I will utter dark sayings of old.
And I hey, just, Moses, do you have a question for Christopher?
Yes, I will. Again, this order involves the chakras as well. I mean, Joseph was given the coat of many colors, so. I just wanted to ask, was Christopher Dunn, you know, has any information concerning that information?
Well, thank you for the call.
No, I'm not too familiar with Melchizedek and these characters from the Bible. At the end, I thought I heard you say something about chakras, incorporating chakras into the comment. If so, yeah, I do talk a bit about chakras and energy fields in the book. you know, that's another that's another language that people use for spirit, right, and soul and spiritual energies in the body and so on, and people do use higher dimensional language to talk about those as well.
Wildcard Charles in Texas. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning. And it is definitely morning here, kind of getting late. But anyway, my question, well, I tried to narrow it down as much as I could, for Donna's sake. But it's just really, this is sort of an issue where you can't really narrow things down this way and really.
Well, we're going to narrow it down because in 2 minutes we're going to go to a break, so
okay,
you better get to it.
Well, anyway, I guess I could ask this question. I don't know if you've ever read J.B. Priestley's, I'm asking Christopher here, if you've ever read J.B. Priestley's sort of a big essay on, it's called Man and Time. It was published along with one of Jung's books.
It's a wonderful book. Yeah, it's a great book.
Yeah. Good. So you have read it. Well, very good. Well, is there anything you can say about it? One of the biggest issues I've been having is with, I guess, with physicists particularly, they seem to still be attached, I guess, in the anthropology of physics. They never really examined their sort of preconceived, their prejudices that come from their pre-physicist life, I suppose. About time, about the issue of time and you know, sort of what it is, how it arises, how it can be even a fundamental dimension of our reality, and then also the whole perception, not just of time, but when I look at things at a quantum level, we see that everything is sort of waves. And, I mean, of course, people don't even ask what waves are or frequencies are, but time becomes very essential to just the existence of matter, you know, and our perception, or our perception of it anyway. So, I mean, there's just, anyway, do you have any comments or thoughts about this?
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's a wonderful book. J.B. Priestley, I talk about in Chapter 6 quite a bit. He's a fascinating character, a very famous British writer and playwright in the 20th century and BBC broadcaster. He gets really interested in higher dimensions. He reads Hinton, who we talked about. He reads J.W. Dunn, who we've talked about. And he comes up and develops his own theories. Interestingly, Priestley, like some of the other figures in the book, has a combat experience. He also fights in World War I. As a young person, and is injured, and he also has some unique experiences of feeling like he's out of time, feeling like he's out of body, and then he writes this great book that the caller mentioned called Man and Time, and in the book he has all kinds of testimonials from people who have written to him about their precognitive dreams. These are dreams that seem to predict future events. He actually gets on the BBC in 1962 or 63, I can't remember, and he asks the viewing audience to write him letters if they've ever had an unusual time experience, if they've ever slipped out of time, if they've ever had a dream that predicted the future, and he got over 1,500 letters from the viewing audience. Many of the letters are still extant. They're still at the University of Bradford. I've been there to read through all the letters, and I incorporate a number of them in my book, especially.
Christopher White, we'll take a break. We're talking about other worlds with Chris White. We'll get to more of your calls and questions in a moment. We're talking with Christopher White. Other Worlds is the title of his book, Spirituality and the Search for Invisible Dimensions. The theme of that song by the Highwaymen, Live Forever, that we are all eternal or immortal. You know, we all want to believe that, I guess. The idea that it's real and it's true and it's seemingly concrete is very appealing. In a moment, we go back to the phones with your calls, questions, and comments from my guest in our final segment of Coast to Coast AM. We'll go to west of the Rockies, Marcia in Los Gatos, California. Marcia, you're on with Christopher White.
Thank you, George and Chris. Your words are like music to me. I would like to say that I hear all the words like expansion of consciousness, exercise in dimensionality, and I can tell you how to do it real cheap and fun. You get a Mylar blanket, like a fire blanket, and it's all folded up into rectangles, and you open it up, and you crinkle it in a few places. It's kind of just like the exercise he told us about with the squares and the plane. And all of a sudden, you'll see moving pictures because light changes and you move and you see faces and people and all cultures and all hairstyles. And it's just lovely. Have you ever tried reflection exercises?
Yeah, no, I've never tried reflection exercises, although in my book I talk a bit about, and in actually some classes I teach at Vassar College, I talk about meditations on reflective surfaces. So, you know, there's even iPhone scrying. You know, I don't know if you've heard that word scrying before, but that is sort of meditating on a reflective surface. It could be a computer screen or a television screen or reflective water or a crystal ball or a number of different surfaces. But I know that that is a spiritual and visionary practice that a number of people use in order to, you know, what we say, reach a higher consciousness or, yeah, so it's, that sounds similar to the kind of practice you're talking about.
Marcia, I just wrote that down. I'm going to give that a try. Thanks for the suggestion.
It's a dollar.
Yeah.
Fun for a
thanks.
Dollar. Thanks
for the idea. All right, east of the Rockies, Michael in Connecticut. Hi, Michael.
What happened to me is I started writing a dream journal, and I wrote down a dream that my mother's husband, who was dead, was going to give me his car and a whole mess of money. So I didn't believe it was going to happen, but it did happen, and I'm now driving his car, and I got the money, too. So it was very strange to me that I dreamed it. Yeah. I wrote it down with a date on it and everything, and it came true, like, months later.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's a whole technique that J.W. Dunn talks about in his book, Experiment with Time, that I talk about in my book about dream journaling and how to do it, and it sounds like you did that. You know, you keep a journal there, you have a dream, you get up, you write it down right away, and keep a whole journal and think about your dreams. And he believed that, you know, like you, he believed everyone would start having these experiences where they would see these glimpses into the future in their dreams. So that's a cool experience.
Thank you, Michael, for sharing. Wildcard Line Joe in Monterey, California. Good morning, Joe.
Good evening, George. I was about to ask your guest if he ever meditated, but I thought that it might be better if I introduce another concept to him as what they call superconscious mind. It's not a remote viewing. Remote viewing has its drawbacks. This is a mental world. This is a mental travel or soul travel, but it's also in a higher state of soul travel called superconscious mind, and you can access these higher worlds. I do this with my clients, and they go into these different worlds for different reasons, whether it's healing, whether it's meet a loved one, for other reasons. It's an extremely complex multiverse, and there's so many different beings out there doing so many different things. I was wondering if he ever considered also a kind of higher self remote writing. It's not like you're writing automatic. It's not automatic writing. It's really listening to your higher self. I call it like taking dictation. And all you need to do is go into like an alpha state or a trance state and just start writing, but listening to your thoughts, not thinking, but listening to what comes to you. And after a short time, it'll start to come out and you'll be channeling your higher self.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that comment because it reminds me of, you know, sometimes the ways that people talk about higher dimensions as a dimension of consciousness, right? And you definitely have this in 20th century psychologists and Carl Jung and many others. You know, when we talk about there being three spatial dimensions to our world, and if there was a fourth direction or dimension, where would that be? Some people say, well, it's going in. You know, it's not going out somewhere, it's going in. That consciousness sort of occupies this sort of new direction. And yeah, through meditative practices, I think it is possible to access those dimensions. You'd asked if I meditate. I do meditate. you know, I do sort of mindfulness meditation, and I definitely get into a, right, into a zone where you feel sort of peaceful and quiet and calm. I haven't had any visionary experiences while meditating. It's much more mundane, unfortunately, but I do meditate and do some of those practices. And in my book, I talk about others who have these kind of visionary meditative practices. Sounds similar to what you do.
Thanks, Joe, for the call. You know, you read about musicians and writers who suddenly get inspiration from just out of the blue. McCartney has written about, you know, writing yesterday. He woke up with it in his head. Other songwriters, entire songs already written that came from somewhere else.
Yeah. And you talk to scientists about scientific creativity and scientific invention, and many scientists will have these same kind of stories. Some of them will talk about dreams. Some of them will talk about other forms of inspiration. Some of them will say that these ideas came from somewhere else and I don't know where they came from. Some of them will talk about there's different layers of consciousness. So I think there's a lot of mysteries in there.
Gordon in Lakeland, Florida. Good morning, Gordon, on the Wild Card Line. You're on with Chris White.
Yeah, George Knapp. I don't think I've ever called into your show. I usually call into the George Norrie show. And Dr. Chris White, thank you for taking my call. But before I ask my question, I wanted to just reference King Melchizedek of Salem is found in Hebrews chapter 7, which makes reference to the King of Salem in the Old Testament, Genesis 14 and Psalms 110, for reference for the listeners, and since you said you didn't have it. Now, I wanted to tie in and get your opinion on my feeling and my theories that the UFOs, the ghosts, the angels, and the demons are usually the same, but in some cases could be different. And for reference, I'm a Christian that holds to the Deuteronomy 18 prohibition against us contacting the spirit world. But now if they contact us, then I have a theory that in most cases, I wanted to ask your opinion whether the you saw that video up there on your Coast to Coast website. I think that they may be using magnets to make that pot shop pencils and pens jump around. But I also think it's possible that there are genuine demons, angels, spirits, which I don't think it's likely that they're the spirits, but it could be, or maybe extraterrestrials, ETs from another dimension. And so my theory holds that in most cases that the demons are masquerading as UFOs and ETs, but in some cases there may be ETs. So I'm going to stay on the line in case you want to ask me a question or something, because this is pretty deep.
Well, that's a lot to chew on there, Gordon. Let's get Chris's take on some of that.
Yeah, there's a lot there. There is a lot there, and there's all of the science fiction literature and even alien abduction literature uses that language of other dimensions, right? That these beings came from another dimension. So there definitely is a lot of that in my book, and there's a lot of that in American pop culture about other dimensional beings. You also raised the question of, you know, what is the relationship of UFOs and extraterrestrial beings to ghosts and spirits or demons? And that's also a question that people raise. You know, I'm not sure I'd be able to shed any additional light on that. I know that from just some of my reading in that literature, and here I'm thinking of like Whitley Strieber. I don't know if you know Whitley Strieber's stuff on communion, or he actually has a new book on the subject as well. But he talks sort of like you do. I mean, he also wonders what the relationship is between alien abduction and extraterrestrials on the one hand versus spirits and ghosts on the other. So Whitley has come to believe that there's a connection, and it sounds like you've come to believe that as well, that there's a connection. Somehow, you know, maybe departed spirits are aliens, or aliens are departed spirits.
And you know, we explore the idea of a unified theory of weirdness on the program, Chris, often looking for connections. And you'd be amazed how many scientists behind the scenes are interested in those kind of subjects as well, whether there's a connection.
Yeah.
You look at the idea of the universe, the many worlds theory, and you talk about it in your book, of course.
Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago that would have been too far out for just about any of them to accept. And now it's not all that controversial anymore.
Isn't it crazy? Yeah, it's really crazy. I mean, Yeah, and there's a number of ways of thinking about a world or a universe with many worlds, right? I mean, you mentioned the many worlds theory of quantum mechanics, and there's, of course, also the multiverse idea, right? The multiverse idea is that there's, you know, a large number or an infinite number of other universes in addition to our visible universe. And, you know, I believe now that that's a very mainstream, that's sort of conventional wisdom now among cosmologists and theoretical physicists, that there is a multiverse, you know, which is, and that's another fantastic scientific concept that there's not proof for. There's really not proof for that idea, but it has become a kind of appealing idea to scientists. And then you mentioned the sort of many infinite parallel universes of many worlds theory, or the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, right? Another idea that we live in a complex and constantly branching universe where there's multiple copies, infinite copies of all of us doing all kinds of other things, right, in parallel worlds. So I do try to introduce some of those other theories towards the end of the book as well. But it's an extremely complicated, you know, it's an extremely complicated subject to try to talk about all the different possible other world scenarios.
Yeah, a lot of combos there. Thanks for the call, Gordon. Yeah. We're going to go to Kent, Ohio. Don is on the wildcard line. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Brother George and Professor White. I want to add a little bit here. The Russians, hikers that were murdered on the De La Paz, one's tongue was taken out, their clothes were radioactive, hardly the work of a Bigfoot. Prayer will open the dimensions. Elisha, in 2 Kings 6, his servant was frightened by the Syrian army that surrounded Dothan, and Elisha prayed to God to open the eyes of his servant. His servant's eyes were opened. In other words, he was able to look into another dimension. The mountains were full of horses and chariots of fire. You couldn't calm a servant much more than that. As far as other worlds, if you go into Hebrews 1, it talks about that God created the worlds, and that's in the plural form that also occurs in chapter 11. So there are dimensions out there. The Bible talks about them as being the unseen. And also there's other worlds populated with intelligent life. So now also, if you know, you're talking a little bit about Ouija boards, and the Bible tells us specifically in Ecclesiastes 9, the dead know nothing, and we're not to get involved in necromancy, seances, any of that. It didn't work out too well with King Saul when he approached the witch of Endor. The next day, he and his both sons...
Hey, Don, do you have a question for Chris?
Oh, I'm just saying that, you know, you want to practice prayer. It's a very good form of meditation, and we're promised in Acts 2:17 that God will open up our eyes and we'll prophesy. The Spirit will move upon all religions.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate the call. Appreciate it. We're going east of the Rockies. Doug in New Jersey. Hi, Doug. Good morning.
Good evening.
Doug?
How are you, gentlemen, this evening?
Good.
What's on your mind?
I was wondering, is there any way you could... practice, or maybe there's something you could do before you go to sleep to help you prepare to be able to remember these dreams, or how to make them more lucid?
I don't know. I don't know if Chris has tried that or has any expertise, but we'll ask him.
Yeah, Dunn in his book on dreams doesn't really talk about preparing yourself at night, although I think there are other folks out there who've written books about how to remember your dreams who do actually, you know, say things like, you know, talk to yourself at night before you sleep and tell yourself you're going to remember your dreams. So I think some people would say there are ways to prepare yourself, but Dunn's system was pretty simple. Just keep a journal under your pillow or on your nightstand, and right when you wake up, whenever it is, write down as many details as you can about the dream. And he feels that by doing that as a daily practice, you'll get better and better, actually, at remembering our dreams. Because our dreams sort of evaporate pretty quickly after we wake up, right? We remember them right away, then we forget them. But his journaling technique, he said, you know, helps people remember more and more details as you go through the process. So that's his pretty simple technique. But there are others out there who talk about dreams and dream interpretation.
Thanks, Doug. I'm going to take a call from, this is the first for me, from Volcano, California. The caller is Brennan. Good morning, Brennan.
Morning.
What's on your mind?
calling about is sleep paralysis. So I keep having these episodes where I'm just a little tidbit. I suffer from insomnia. So when I get on these rolls where I don't sleep for consecutive days very well, it seems like after about 5 or 6 days of this that I get on this trip where I'm falling asleep, but my body's falling asleep and my mind's awake. And I guess they call it sleep paralysis, but it's almost like I go into a different universe and there's always beings that I see. And usually they're trying to get me and pull me out of my body. And not only that, I can hear them. They talk to me. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on, is this just an hallucination? You know, am I just hallucinating like the internet or Wikipedia would say, or the doctors would say, or is this an actual dimension that during the state of my body is in, I'm able to actually, I don't want to say teleport, but you know, something along that lines into that, because it's very scary actually.
Thanks for the call,
Brendan. Let's let Christopher respond. Thanks, Brendan, for the call. So does sleep deprivation lead to other realities, I wonder?
Well, he mentioned the word sleep paralysis, and he also, it seemed to, I thought I heard him say consulting doctors or Wikipedia. There is a category of sleep paralysis, and there are things that happen when people are falling asleep or waking up, and the sleep paralysis thing is scary. This is very common. You know, people wake up and they can't move. You know, and it can, I believe it can be accompanied by seeing things and hearing things and so on. So, you know, if the question is, you know, is this merely a physiological, biological issue or problem, or is it somehow an opening to spiritual worlds? I guess my answer is I don't know. I think that if you do look online or consult a doctor, they will tell you what I said, which is, yeah, these kinds of things happen, and sometimes when people are awake, they're in a kind of an in-between state of consciousness, you know, and they'll talk in terms of psychology and neurology. But could it also be an opening to other realities, other spiritual realities?
Maybe.
I don't know. You know, in some cultures, you know, people have visions that can be traced to, you know, brain chemistry or some sort of aspect of their biology or the brain chemistry. But I don't think that rules out the possibility that, you know, their particular seizure or brain chemistry is also, you know.
Chris White, thank you very much. Appreciate it. I enjoyed the book. It's called Other Worlds. I hope people will check it out. Thanks also to my earlier guest, Nick Redfern. And we've got his links posted on the Coast to Coast website. And thanks to my colleagues there at Coast, Michael Cosio and Donna Walker, Dan Galanti, Greg Bishop, our webmaster tonight, and producer Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back soon. Good night, everyone.